Hi, this is Robert Scheer with another edition of Scheer Intelligence. And I'm really quite thrilled to have Laura Greenfield here, who many of you might know if you follow independent films, The Queen of Versailles, which was a great study in the bizarre nature of wealth accumulation in sort of a nouveau riche American culture. And it was the building of a castle of Versailles in Florida. And you've, Laura, I'm not going to say too much because I want you to describe your new movie, Generation Wealth.
I realized at the time of the financial crash and when I was making my last film, The Queen of Versailles, that the stories that I had covered about materialism and celebrity and fame since the early 90s told a bigger story about how we had changed. And I felt like we had had this kind of monumental shift in the last 25 years where the American dream had really become corrupted, kind of going from values of hard work and frugality and discipline and that being a means of social mobility that was accessible to anyone, to a culture that elevated bling and celebrity and narcissism. And at the same time, the reality of social mobility really not being a real goal for people anymore, that has just decreased. And we have less intergenerational social mobility than any other rich country now.
A big question raised by this movie, what happened to the meritocracy? This was supposed to educate people to do the right thing. You yourself, let's begin with that, are a product of that. You obviously did well enough in high school, at this high school you take some shots at, to get to Harvard. And you go on to an incredible career. What happened? What happened to all your colleagues, your generation? You're the generation wealth.
I was looking at my generation and in a way kind of the contradictions and dilemmas of my generation. I mean, first of all, to go back to Crossroads, I actually have a huge amount of affection for the school and feel like that's also what taught me kind of my critical thinking. And I see the same with my sons. And yet it's also part of privilege as any private school in LA. And really when I started photographing there, what I saw was that it wasn't just limited to one particular school, that in the private schools, you could see this privilege and the way it affected kids. I tell a story about when I went back to photograph and some kids asked me what I was doing. And I said a project about growing up in LA. And they said, well, you have to photograph money then. And they pulled out dollar bills and I took a picture, and it wasn't until I got home that and looked at them under the loop, under the magnoscope, that I realized they were holding up $100 bills and these were 13-year-olds. And yet that pushed me to also look at East LA, South Central LA, Hollywood High School, public schools, the inner city, and really see that across the map of LA, kids were aspiring to a kind of materialism that at that time I thought was coming from hip hop culture and MTV, and that being a driver of materialism across class, across neighborhood, across race. And of course, the private school kids had access to kind of a life of excess that the other kids didn't. But it was really the values being formed that I saw happening among very different kinds of kids. And the subjects who I'm really indebted to have always been the truth tellers. There was one 13-year-old who's in the film, who's at a bar mitzvah that's very extravagant. It's happening at the Whiskey A Go Go nightclub.
That's sick. Well, don't you say extravagant. That scene is, it's the, first of all, I mean, here's this old religion, Judaism, right, which many people celebrate and is, you know, carrying a long tradition of various values and so forth. And what is this? You go to Whiskey A Go Go and you have basically strippers around.
And there were go-go girls dancing with the kids. And yet, Adam,
not
the
just
kid,
dancing, you know, pushing their breasts in their face. I mean, that's a rite of passage.
And yet Adam, who's in the middle of it, who says, you know, he has to have a big bar mitzvah to keep up, spend $50,000, I think he said, he also says money ruins kids. And that his parents are also aware of that and he's aware of that. So in a way, he's completely buying into it and at the same time, the social critic. And in a way, that's my role too, as kind of always been both an insider and an outsider. So just want to clarify that this is not about a particular school or a particular class. It's really about, and it's not even about the rich. It's more about what I call the influence of affluence, the aspiration, and in a way, the kind of aspirational hunger, kind of disease, kind of perpetual dissatisfaction that we really see among so many people. And what I did over the 25 years was kind of tracked what began in LA across the country through media and globalism as drivers, and also this kind of ethos of elevating wealth, which I think did start in the 80s, to as the virus went international, and I look at China and Russia and Europe in what led to the crash and the way they were also affected by the crash. So this is really kind of, in a way, the media as driver and something that affects people from so many different backgrounds.
Yeah, the movie's Generation Wealth, and it's really about the collapse of the American empire. I don't think it's putting words in your mouth. But let me just say, my issue with this movie, and I really urge people to watch it because it's a great way to start a discussion and think about what's going on. We all know something really bad is happening to our society, or Donald Trump wouldn't be president. Whatever you think about Donald Trump, it's just a very bizarre choice. If we were really a settled, reasonable, established society, you don't have a crotch snatcher be your president, okay, or at least a public one. And there's something out there. It's out. The thing is not working, and that's why your movie is so timely. It compels a discussion. However, I think that discussion should consider not just the deplorables, to use Hillary Clinton's excuse for losing the election, or these deplorables out there who voted for this deplorable opponent, but rather the establishment. And you are a product of this establishment education. You went to Harvard, and Harvard is sort of mentioned in the movie. Well, Harvard has become a den of iniquity in terms of this financial crisis. Most of the crooks came from places like Harvard or Yale.
And the movie addresses that, yes, because the biggest villain, in a way, in the movie is a hedge fund banker named Florian Holm, who makes $800 million. And that's not enough, continues basically like Icarus until he falls and is accused of defrauding investors of $200 million, which he never really apologizes for, but does learn in the process that he was chasing the wrong god. And I knew him from my time at Harvard, and we have a dialogue about that where he's talking about going to Harvard Business School and kind of learning the rules of the game there. And I said, does Harvard Business School teach you how to be a good person? And he laughs this demonic laugh and says, no, we're fine-tuned to rule the world. And I think he really speaks to the way the elite, the trained elite, and then the people who become the holding the levers of finance kind of rig the system for them. He actually has a line where he says, we made the rules for us. And he learned the American way and then brought it over to Europe. So he starts the newer mark in Germany and brings the kind of ruthless banking practices that were here over to Europe. So in a way, he's also a driver of the spread. But I definitely acknowledge my own complicity as part of that in the film. I think that the reason I've been able to document many of these trends is because I've been allowed to be on the inside. Also working for magazines, being part of the media, and the media that exploits the kind of images of sexuality and money and all of the things that I'm criticizing, but doing it with a kind of subversive edge where we also see the critique.
You are of a generation where, and I'm not blaming you for this, but you wanted to get into the right school, into the good school. And the good schools turned out to be centers, as I said before, of corruption, because this greed generation required changing the laws. That's what.
And in a way, that's what I was reacting to, is that when I was in school, everybody was kind of getting on this assembly line to banking. And that was kind of, and money was kind of considered success. I think that came out of the 80s and the movie Wall Street and the character Gordon Gekko, who said greed is good. And many bankers, including Florian Helm, kind of looked up to that. And that was really different than in my parents' generation. I mean, my mom, who does cross-cultural work, who really influenced me, there's a line in the film. I mean, I think it was really me going to high school and being influenced by the values of my friends and kind of wanting to have the clothes and the cars that I was seeing my peers do in conflict with the values that my parents were trying to teach me.
And it's interesting you bring up generation. I happened to interview Bill Gates about the origins of his and his wife's social responsibility of putting a foundation. He attributed all to their parents. Mm. And his father, who was a judge, was head of a group called Jurors, or very active in a group called Jurors for Justice. Rural legal aid, legal aid came out of that. His mother had a real strong social conscience. So here's Bill Gates, when I'm interviewing him, was, I don't know, at that moment, maybe the richest guy around, and explaining why he wanted to give it all away, just a little bit, some out for his kids if they wanted to live a more idealistic life. He had joined with Warren Buffett, to tax away the rich. I'm not going to defend everything Microsoft or Bill Gates has done, and I think some of his theories on education are not good. But nonetheless, there was a sense of obligation that Buffett had, that Gates got, and your movie really hits on that. You're really dealing with scumbags here.
Well,
you're dealing with, no, I mean, these are really unattractive people who have, it's all about money. They have no, his own son says that about your college friend, right?
Right.
He can't.
But, I mean, I think that we need to step back from that a little bit, because what I was really looking at was how this is what we have become as a culture. I think that the characters in the film, while they might seem extreme, are really representing kind of different strands of what is in kind of affecting all of us on a daily basis. I think it's too easy to say, you know, it's over there, it's over there. I mean, I agree with you that the values like Bill Gates come from our parents. And my dad says that his dad taught him that you need to do good in the world. And that had a huge effect on him. I think, unfortunately, kids today are not looking to Bill Gates and Warren Buffett as their heroes. They're looking to Kim Kardashian and Jay-Z and Donald Trump. And in a way, these are kind of the new role models, which represent more bling and narcissism than giving back. That's not really a value that is kind of being pushed forward. And it doesn't really sell much, that the values that are kind of being pushed to us are the ones that will make us want to buy the next makeup or, you know.
Right.
I think the thing about Trump that is a real validation in a way of what I've seen kind of brew in the culture over the last 25 years is that we can't say this is just limited to reality TV or this is just limited to, you know, people that we would not identify with. We have to really be responsible for this is kind of us, the reality show culture, where it's in the White House. When there was a picture with Kim Kardashian and Donald Trump in the White House that, you know, could have been an ad for this movie in a weird way. It was just kind of so unbelievable that we would have this reality star kind of elevated to the highest office in the land, a job that has been called public service, but is, you know, not really about service anymore.
Well, we're going to take a break for a minute. I'm talking to Lauren Greenfield, and I'm going to take issue with that last point, one report, because I think Trump, for all of his failings, represents a needed shock therapy. That is why this movie is so relevant, and why there might really be a good national discussion. But we'll be right back. We're back with Lauren Greenfield, who's made a really provocative and important movie, Generation Wealth. And it's really, as Chris Hedges, who's featured in this movie as a commentator, and I think really adds a lot of heft to it, not that others don't, he raises the prospect that it's not the deplorables that Hillary Clinton blamed for her defeat in the Electoral College, or people voting for this character Trump that you describe quite accurately, reprehensible in so many ways. But he says, no, it's the empire in decline. And let me, you know, for the second half, I want to get there a little bit. And I think the movie really raises this. It goes a bit further in certain ways than Inside Job, which won the Academy Award for its discussion of this. But Inside, these should be seen as bookends, frankly, the two movies, because what Inside Job says, it's an inside job.
Right.
It came from Alan Greenspan, okay? It came from Bill Clinton. The deregulation of Wall Street happened in the 90s when Bill Clinton was president. He made a pivot because he wanted this Wall Street money. He turned to, the Republicans and said, let's give Wall Street what it wants, which is the end of the New Deal regulations, Glass-Steagall, and so forth. And Lawrence Summers, Robert Rubin, who had come from Goldman Sachs, Lawrence Summers then took over from Robert Rubin. That's what they did. Hillary Clinton as a senator and Chuck Schumer, who's now the great Democrat saving us all, they carried water for Wall Street completely. And yes, your movie captures the unfortunates out there who fall for it. They want the money, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, I forget his name, the guy you know who's the big...
Florian Hum.
Yeah. He points out you can't... What he basically was doing was legally may have gone too far, but you could not do all this if Congress had not made it legal.
Right. I mean, I think you're exactly right. It is a companion to Inside Job in the sense that we see how people like Florian Hum, and he admits it from the inside, are rigging the system to basically take advantage of human nature that has been primed by the forces of capitalism so that you have this pent-up demand. I mean, I think the reason that, in a way, it kind of explains why working class and middle class people voted for Trump, maybe against their own economic interest, because we see that Americans don't hate the rich because they always imagine they'll be that someday. It's like, I think Obama even said a couple decades ago when he was a lawyer that Trump's power is that people imagine they will be him, and if not them, their child. And so there's this desire, there's this kind of aspirational feeling about wealth, even as it becomes more and more unrealistic. And Chris Hedges has a great line about that, where he says that in a way, bling, this kind of fictitious social mobility, is a replacement for any kind of real social mobility. But I think that what happened is we all got kind of mind conditioned by reality TV and social media to kind of want more. That we used to, in the last 25 years, the images of wealth and luxury have become much, much more ubiquitous. And the research shows that the more we're bombarded with those images, the more we think that's normal and the more we want those things. And so the way Americans used to kind of compare themselves to their neighbors, because the American dream was always materialistic in its heart, but it used to be a little bit more realistic. People would look to the neighbor down the road that had a little bit more. And that kind of keeping up with the Jones idea became keeping up with the Kardashians as we started to spend more time with the people we knew on television and identify with them more than our own neighbors. And that created an aspirational gap where what people wanted had no relation with what they could afford. And so when the banks started lending and all these subprime loans and kind of credit and methods for acquiring these things to feel rich, then we had a very, very vulnerable public. And in a way, the film is more about that human nature than anything else. We also see it with girls and women and the kind of commodification of girls' bodies, that if you so insecurity in somebody, and a lot of my work has been looking at the body image insecurity of girls, they're going to be avid and insatiable consumers for that thing that will fix them. And once they get it, then there's another thing.
And so really what the movie gets at is that it's a generation that is incapable of functioning effectively in a republic, a democratic society, where you're supposed to have agency and responsibility and what you do matters. Now it's all pursuit of some reward. And there isn't even an afterlife. There isn't even a judging God that anybody believes in. It's all, you know, did you get yours? And did you get it in the short run? That's the other thing. You have people, and it's an interesting theme that you weave through your movie of parenting. And I thought that was a very interesting hook, because if you have a child and you're a halfway decent person, you will understand the vulnerability of everyone in the world, okay, and not just yourself. And you can't be so self-centered, right? And what you, we're really describing in your movie is a society that shuns responsibility even for your own progeny. You know, it's just like your joy, your career, your goodies.
Although I think in a way in the film, the children are the redemption of the parents, and the film does end on, in a way, a surprisingly hopeful note, because, you know, I agree we are kind of hurtling towards the apocalypse, as Chris Hedges says so well, and that maybe, I agree with you, Trump is the jolt to the system that we need to kind of see clearly what we have become, because I think Chris Hedges said that he is, in a way, a symptom of a diseased culture. And I think that the film really explores that part of it. But in a way, it's when it's in the parenting that we see towards the end of the film that people kind of come, and because of their own crashes, that they come back to what matters, that they realize that it's really about family and community and love and kind of these traditional values that they've lost sight of. I think that what we see in the film is that materialism both feeds and hides insatiable hunger, and that the victimizing that you're talking about is not just, you know, the poor or the disenfranchised, although they definitely have it worse, but we see that kind of psychic pain from rich to poor. You know, we have examples like Florian and Suzanne that are rich but don't have what they really want. And then we see Kathy and Daphne who have kind of given up everything for a dream that doesn't bring them what they want.
Okay, but let me tell you what I think is the real power of your film. I think it's a profoundly radical film in the best sense. It challenges the basic assumption of the Trump campaign is that to make America great again means greater wealth, greater decadence, greater materialism, greater indifference to the rest of the world, because it's totally an America-centric view, America power, we're virtuous, and so forth. It seems to me the great strength of the American experiment was quite the opposite. You had a bunch of people here, some of them who were escaping England because they were convicts and so forth, and their whole warning of the founders, yes, white male, yes, limited, was, you know, you don't have all the answers, and the rest of the world didn't. Rome didn't, England didn't, Spain didn't, and you got to scratch out some meaning here in this new territory and do it with caution. You know, as George Washington said, beware the impostures of pretended patriots. You had separation of powers, you had restraint, you had the rights of the individual. That wisdom has been lost.
Yeah.
And what Trump wants to do, but I would throw Hillary Clinton, because that was his opponent, into the same mix. Hillary Clinton thinks she does have the answers for the world. In fact, her answer to Trump in those debates was America is great. America was always great. Oh, really? When we had slavery, when we had segregation, when we killed 6 million people in Vietnam, when we invaded Iraq on a base, you know, but Hillary's response, as opposed to Bernie Sanders, response was a sensible populism. Hillary Clinton's response was to Trump, hey, get off it, and you are deplorables who are supporting you. No, we are great. And your movie says, no, we're not. We're actually a pretty miserable place.
Well, I think Chris Hedges at the end talks about how we need to be able to look at ourselves and criticize ourselves. And in a way, that's what we've lost as we're kind of awash in the values of corporate capitalism. And I think this work and this film is really about deconstructing the culture so we can see the matrix that we're in and then hopefully have some agency over it. I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of education, and education not just being for the elites like at places like Harvard, that once we stopped kind of educating people to a high degree everywhere, that is a threat, the threat to our democracy and a threat to being able to kind of think critically about the world that we're living in.
But I want to push back on the Harvard, not to single out Harvard. No, I mean, I teach at a school at USC, which is a highly ranked school. I just saw in the Wall Street Journal we're ranked number 15, and it costs money to go there. And I'm not putting down these places. But what I will push back on, I mean, and Chris Hedges, after all, is a graduate of the Harvard Divinity School and now works in prisons teaching because he has a collar. It's easier to get in. I understand all that, and there are good people. However, the banking meltdown happened because the big business schools, whether they're at USC or UCLA or Harvard or Yale, and the Ivy Leagues were more central, lost sight of the classic liberal arts obligation. The obligations, they lost sight of what the old ruling class used to believe, which is you have to be responsible. You have to have adults watching the store. You don't do. And what you are movie describes is people of enormous power acting like teenage maniacs, you know, in every aspect of their life, and wallowing in greed and decadence. I mean, this movie is really quite an indictment of where we are. My only pushback is that many of the people you describe in your movie, and certainly the people, and look, Lawrence Summers destroyed our economy as Secretary of Treasury, okay, under Bill Clinton. He was rewarded by being named head of Harvard. I mean, let's not kid around. He was named head of Harvard after the deregulation of Wall Street, and he also made an awful lot of money from Wall Street, you know, consulting and everything. And then what? I suppose he was even made head of Harvard because he brought money in. He's also the person who famously said women can't think in math and science and so forth. So I do think this will be the last thing I'll push you on. You've been very generous with your time. But this movie raises the question, how did our culture go awry? And there's one school of thought which I think is quite dangerous, is to blame ordinary people, okay? You didn't rise to the occasion. You're the deplorables. That's what Hillary Clinton did. The deplorables, they go, they're racist, they're stupid, they don't want to work hard, and so forth. That's why we have Donald Trump. That's not why we have Donald Trump. Donald Trump's a graduate of the Wharton Business School. Donald Trump succeeded in that market, okay? And we have Donald Trump because those values, and by the way, who gave him the big showcase? Mainstream television, reality shows. So I'm going to give you the podium here now to tell us, and we'll end on this, what you really think about how we got to this impasse.
Well, I mean, I think Trump is the apotheosis of generation wealth. I think he expresses the values of elevating money that I agree the government has kind of been espousing since Reagan, that looking up to kind of people with money as more moral, elevating fame, Trump also expresses kind of the commodification of women and women being expressions of his success, celebrity, real estate. But I think that we also can't, I agree with you, we can't blame any particular group for bringing him in, because it also is a function of our media and the values of this country that we really need to kind of see him as, in a way, the pathology of our, an expression of the pathology of generation wealth.
Thank you, Lauren Grifo, for a great movie that people should check out. That's it for this edition of Shear Intelligence. My producer is Joshua Shear. Our engineers are Kat Yor and Mario Diaz at KCRW. And here at NPR West, Ley del Águila has been very helpful in getting the show on the air.